Hey, denk dran, dass auch dein Immunsystem Hunger hat. Und probier's mal mit den Gesundheitszielen zur Ernährung in der App Auka Navida. Hol dir Tipps, Rezepte und Challenges für dein gesünderes Ich. Jetzt die App Auka Navida downloaden und loslegen. Auka Plus. Aus Liebe zur Gesundheit.
Hello, this is Dr. Grande. Today I'll be analyzing the case of David and Karen Swift. First I'll look at the background of this case, move to the timeline of the crime, then offer my analysis. David Glenn Swift was born in January 1968 and lived in the state of Arkansas. He married a woman named Karen Sue Swift on September 23, 1989. She was 1 year older than him. The couple had 2 sons. David had an affair, which led to a divorce in 2000. For some reason, David and Karen reconciled that same year and remarried. They went on to have 2 daughters. After this, Karen had an affair. Perhaps as a way to start over with a clean slate, the family moved from Arkansas to Dyersburg, Tennessee. This town of 16,000 is 75 miles north of Memphis. They lived in a 2,300-square-foot house on Willie Johnson Road. This is one of those cases where whoever named the road probably should have said the name out loud before finalizing the documents. How did a name like this get through the naming committee? I guess when it popped up, the members reached a firm consensus. By 2011, Karen's behavior had changed quite a bit. She appeared to be having a midlife crisis. Karen developed a new circle of friends and would go out at night. She was drinking, partying, and expressing interest in other men. On October 11 of that year, she filed for divorce. Karen and David slept in separate bedrooms. Their 2 daughters were the only other people living in the house at this time. Now moving to the timeline of the crime. On the night of October 29, 2011, 44-year-old Karen Swift attended a Halloween party with her friends Kathy and Bill Bona. She planned to sleep at their house that night. However, at about 1 a.m., now on October 30, Karen received a call from her 9-year-old daughter, Ashley. She was at a sleepover with friends and wanted to go home. Karen picked up Ashley and took her to the Swift family house, arriving at about 2 a.m. Karen and her daughter went to sleep in the same bed, but eventually someone moved Ashley into her younger sister's bedroom. Ashley would later say that she was confident her mother was the one who moved her. About 12 hours later that same day, at 2:37 p.m., Karen's friends, Kathy and Bill, reported her missing to the authorities. Not long after this, Karen's husband, David, did the same thing. Here is what the police found during the course of their investigation. Karen's 2004 Nissan Murano SUV was found 2,000 feet from her house at the intersection of Millsfield Highway and Harness Road. It was locked, and the front passenger side tire was flat. There was a screw in it. The seat was pushed back as if someone taller than Karen had been driving the vehicle. About 500 feet from Karen's house, her 2 cell phones were found. One of these phones was a secret phone that her friends Kathy and Bill gave to her. Karen used it to communicate with romantic interests. Cell phone data from the 2 phones indicated that they were in Karen's house starting at 2:08 a.m. The phones left the house at 5:04 a.m. All activity on the phone ceased at 5:09 a.m. The police spoke to David. He said he did not know what happened to his wife. He complained a lot about how she would sneak out at all hours of the night to drink and party. According to David, everything was good in the marriage until Karen became friends with Kathy and Bill. He claimed that one time when he went looking for Karen, he found her in bed with Kathy. Karen was not wearing any clothing. The police continued to look for Karen, but did not have any success. The search for her ended 6 weeks later, on December 10, 2011, when a caretaker of Bledsoe Cemetery found Karen's partially clothed body in vegetation. This cemetery is off Harness Road, about 3 miles from Karen's house. Karen's cause of death was blunt force injury to her head. Despite having Karen's body, her vehicle, and her cell phones, the evidence did not point to a clear suspect. The police did not know who killed Karen, although they suspected David was involved. After all, Karen had filed for divorce 3 weeks before her death. For his part, David Swift swiftly moved on with his life. He moved to Birmingham, Alabama with his two daughters. In 2014, he met a woman named Kelly. They married in May 2016. Back in Dyer County, Tennessee, where Dyersburg is, Karen's case became a campaign issue during the election for district attorney. The police kept looking for any clues, desperate to get a break in the case. In 2022, a search of the house on Willie Johnson Road yielded a curious discovery, which had been missed during the original search. There was a burn barrel in the ground containing a barbell. It matched another barbell that was found in the house. This baffling and bizarre buried burn barrel and barbell brought about boundless bewilderment, bamboozling investigators beyond belief. Tests did not reveal any evidence connecting the barbell to Karen's murder, but the authorities decided it was time to charge David. In August 2022, David was arrested for murder and released on a $200,000 bond. In July 2023, David's bond was revoked after he was accused of felony stalking in Alabama. Allegedly, he had been stalking his now ex-wife, Kelly. For example, she captured him on video sneaking into her backyard at night. On May 28, 2024, David's murder trial started in Tennessee. On June 6, he was found not guilty of four charges: first-degree premeditated murder, attempted first-degree premeditated murder, second-degree murder, and attempted second-degree murder. He can never be retried on those charges. That was the end of any effort by the state to convict him of first or second-degree murder. The jury was unable to reach a verdict on the lesser-included charge of voluntary manslaughter. A mistrial was declared for that charge. At the time I'm making this video, no date has been set for David's second trial, and of course he is still facing the felony stalking charge in Alabama. Now moving to my analysis. David Swift maintains his innocence, and he has a substantial number of supporters, including his daughter Ashley. Many people believe the state has no proof that David was guilty. The state, of course, disagrees. They believe, when considered together, all the pieces of evidence form an image of guilt. This brings me to the question, was David Swift guilty of murder? Let's take a look at the evidence both for and against the idea that he was guilty, starting with the inculpatory factors. Karen filed for divorce about 3 weeks before she was killed. David wanted to reconcile, but Karen refused. Witnesses believe that David had stalked his wife. He would follow her to various places, show up uninvited when she was out with friends, like when she was at dinner, and confront her and demand that she come home. Karen's friend Kathy said that during one 30-minute period, David had called and texted Karen 25 times. When his wife went missing, David kept telling the police about how she had a reckless lifestyle involving drinking and partying. A key part of David's defense was that he had an injured knee. It had been operated on prior to Karen's murder. He could not have physically carried out the murder with this injury. However, one witness reported seeing David on crutches while talking to another neighbor. When the other neighbor went inside, David stopped using the crutches. Another witness testified that on the day before Karen went missing, David helped him move bales of hay that weighed 65 pounds each. David was not using crutches while offering this assistance. An expert for the state believed that the screw found in Karen's tire was inserted by a human being, not by running over it. This made it seem like the vehicle had been staged. In theory, David would have more of a motive to do this than a random killer. On the night she was murdered, Karen took medication to sleep. Why would she do that if she was going to go back out? Someone in the Swift family house used David's computer at 3 a.m. to delete images of Karen. After Karen went missing, David visited dating sites frequently. He seemed to move on pretty quickly. Karen's two cell phones were found close to her house. If she was murdered by a random killer after leaving that night, it seems odd that the killer would have put the phones so close to her house. David was charged with felony stalking in Alabama, but the jury did not hear that evidence. Moving to the exculpatory factors, there is no forensic evidence connecting David to Karen's death. No DNA, no blood, no fingerprints, no hair, nothing at all. Nobody saw Karen get murdered, and there was no video. In the time leading up to her death, Karen was going through a stage that that involved a lot of drinking and partying. She would often leave the house at night. As far as somebody deleting Karen's images off David's computer, maybe Karen did that. Perhaps she did not want him to have access to them anymore now that they were getting divorced. Three witnesses claimed that they saw a man, who was not David, with a metal detector at the cemetery before Karen's body was found. David's physical therapist said that David had limited use of his injured knee. Considering all the evidence in this case, do I think that David Swift was guilty of murder? I believe he was guilty in reality, but there is no way he was guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. The jury should have acquitted him on all charges, not just the murder charges. All the state had, as far as evidence, was a motive. There was nothing else. Retrying David for voluntary manslaughter does not make any sense. What do I think happened in this case? This is just a theory, my opinion. David and Karen had a tumultuous relationship. Both of them had affairs in the past. They weren't well suited for one another, but they kept getting back together. David was controlling, needy, and insecure. However, this did not have a significant impact on the marriage until Karen had her midlife crisis. She decided that her life needed more excitement. She found new friends, adopted a party lifestyle, looked for romantic partners, and consumed excessive quantities of alcohol. Karen was like a different person. When she filed for divorce, she wanted primary custody of her daughters and was seeking over $1,400 a month in child support. Even though the financial impact was upsetting to David, his primary feeling was jealousy. He knew that Karen was looking for new love interests. On October 29, 2011, David invited Karen to dinner so they could talk about reconciliation, but she rejected this invitation in favor of a Halloween party. During the early morning hours on October 30, David beat Karen to death with a weapon that he later disposed of. The state's theory is that David stomped on Karen's head. However he did it, David managed not to leave any evidence behind. He drove about 3 miles away to the cemetery, dumped Karen's body, then put a screw in the tire of her vehicle. He drove as the tire lost air, which damaged the tire. He ended up at the intersection where Karen's vehicle was later found. David wanted it to look like Karen had left during the night, was forced to stop due to the flat tire, and decided to walk back home. At some point on this trip, which was 2,000 feet, she was attacked by a stranger. Law enforcement was convinced that David was the killer, but all they had was a motive. Eventually, they prosecuted him anyway, using very weak evidence. When he was arrested for stalking Kelly in Alabama, some of the doubt in this case was removed, but the state could not use that arrest as evidence in the murder trial. The jury acquitted David of the murder charges because there was reasonable doubt. There was also reasonable doubt about the voluntary manslaughter charge, but the jury deadlocked because they felt like David did something wrong. That's really the theme of this case. David is a bad guy, but there's no way to prove it. He does not seem like he's capable of pulling off the perfect murder, yet somehow he did it. Now moving to my final thoughts. When a person has a midlife crisis, they tend to focus entirely on meeting their own desires. In this case, Karen changed her behavior drastically and wasn't really thinking about how David might react. It never occurred to her that his controlling behavior signaled the potential for dangerousness. Karen let her guard down and underestimated the jealousy dynamic in the marriage. In this vulnerable position, David had all the opportunity he needed to carry out the murder. The midlife crisis also had another effect. It contributed to David escaping responsibility. Karen had a habit of leaving at night, so it seemed possible she could have left on her own and been killed by someone else. The lesson learned here is no matter how bad a marriage is, it is not safe to assume that both spouses are fine with it dissolving. There will always be strong feelings when people separate. Sometimes people hold on to the worst marriages with the highest level of determination. Those are my thoughts on the case of David and Karen Swift. Thank you so much for watching. I'll talk to you soon. I've covered a lot of cases throughout the years that involved a couple, like a husband and wife, getting divorced and then marrying each other again. So they remarry, but to each other. They don't find other people, new people. They just stick with each other. This phenomenon is not really studied much in the research literature, But just looking at it as far as the cases I've covered, it does seem to be associated with a bad outcome. Like I have seen it a disproportionate number of times looking through these different homicide cases and other criminal cases. I don't think that really means anything. I don't think that remarrying the same person necessarily causes homicide or anything. But it does indicate an interesting dynamic, right? It indicates that there are two people who maybe have a lot of love and hate going on in the same marriage. Like they're strongly attracted to each other, but maybe they don't like each other at the same time. They don't know what to do. They're drawn to the other person. They are distant from the other person. Like they can't figure out how to navigate the relationship. They don't know where to set the boundary. Maybe it's like that phrase, you can't live with them and you can't live without them. I don't know. But it's curious that in this case, we see an affair caused the divorce. It was David's affair. And then the couple remarried right away in the same year, in the year 2000. Then, I believe it was 6 years later, Karen had an affair. So maybe David had this sense that, well, it can work out again. We can fix this because we fixed a pretty bad situation before. When Karen kept doing things that signaled she was not open to reconciliation, like looking for other men and partying all night, drinking, and rejecting David's invitation to go to dinner, maybe David started to believe this really was the end, like there would be no reconciliation. They were going to divorce, and this time they would not remarry. This might have pushed him to a point of desperation. It's really impossible to know what happened here. As I mentioned, David was found not guilty. So as far as the murder part, there isn't one. He'll never be retried. Maybe he will go to trial for the voluntary manslaughter. Like I said, it's not scheduled yet, but it seems like that's going to happen. But I think getting a conviction is going to be pretty difficult. If David did this, he managed to escape responsibility. It's one of those cases where there's just no evidence available. Everything was based on motive. A lot of people believe he was guilty based on motive. I think he did it in reality. But without corroborating evidence, without something else that points to him, it's impossible to find him guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. I think that's what happened here. David just managed to not leave evidence behind. Sometimes that happens. Sometimes the circumstances are such where a person can carry out a crime and there's simply no way to prove they did it.